Welcome to Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Robbie Straczynski. Thank you so much for joining us on episode number 119 of Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town. Today's guest is a professional poker player who has won almost $12 million at the Live Felt in tournaments alone. He's a three-time WSOP bracelet winner, a WPT Champions Club member, and the co-founder of Chip Leader Coaching. We're talking, of course, about Chance Cornith. We're thrilled that he's here to speak with us today about his career to date and what's to come. Chance, welcome to the Cards Chat podcast.
Thanks for having me, Robbie.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you giving us an hour of your time. I'm excited about this. This is one of the rare among the 119 episodes we've recorded where I'm getting to know someone kind of brand new for the first time. Obviously, I know of your poker career, but there's so much more to it than just, you know, all those wonderful trophies. Folks, if you're listening, Chance, it's not a Zoom background that he's got there. It's lots of trophies that he's won over his poker career, but it's obviously a lot more deep than that. And I'm eager to get to know you a little bit. So thanks a lot again for joining us. Chance is one of, if not the greatest poker-related first name that I've ever come across. Is there a story behind that name? And whether yes or no, did you ever sort of feel some sort of surreal calling to poker because of that name at any point in your life?
I think as far as it being like a specific, I've always like kind of been like liked the fact that my name was Chance that I played poker, but I don't know that I necessarily felt a specific calling. Poker just kind of felt right. And when people ask me at the table, like, it's my real name, I'm like, yeah, my mom was just a hippie is like typically the joke I go with, which is also true. But I think they said that, there was some show back in the day called Moonlighting that Bruce Willis guest starred on, and he was a saxophone player named Chance, and that's where they heard it for the first time, and they liked it and went from there.
Interesting. Well, I wasn't planning on going there right away, but you mentioned, you know, your mom's a hippie, that sort of a thing. That generation of folks, you know, what was their attitude and reaction when they said, when you said to them, hey, I think I'm going to go and play poker for a living?
When I dropped out of school, my dad was like more immediately supportive and my mom was more, thinking that I should finish. And, it was actually my math professor in college that gave me the courage to drop out. And he's like, you can always come back to school. He's like, but this is like an opportunity of something that you enjoy doing. That you should, you know, you're doing really well at it. You love it. Like, go give it a shot. And that's when I did.
Interesting word that you use there, courage, because that's not always a word associated with dropping out. So I'm imagining based on that, that you don't really have any regrets at all.
No, definitely don't have any regrets. But I think I use the word courage because it takes, I mean, courage to drop out of school because dropping out of school has such a negative connotation around it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, let's get into that poker career. You know, looking at your Hendon mob and you see, you know, your first results, live results at the Felt came pretty darn quickly. You turned 21 in 2008 and you had three, not just cashes, but wins out of your first four Hendon mob results, all in Bellagio 1K entries events. So for a 21-year-old, I mean, I know first events that I entered, you know, were more of the two-figure buy-in variety, and you're entering 1Ks. How did you build your bankroll prior to that?
I started playing online in college and had run up maybe like somewhere between 50 and 100 grand. And I remember playing those tournaments. They were like basically 40 to 50 runners each one. And they were $500 on the weekdays and $1,000 on the weekends. And I played six of the weekend ones. I didn't really play the $500 ones. And I won three of them. And it was a pretty awesome start. There was a significant skill edge, especially back then. And those tournaments were very soft.
Right. And you felt that, I mean, obviously you had tons of experience in poker up till then playing online. And yet live, I mean, did you feel like it was a completely natural transition for you? And, oh, wow, I can beat these guys up. Or, you know, was there any kind of like acknowledgement, okay, maybe I'm just running a little better than EV to win 3 out of 4 right away?
I mean, I definitely ran well, that goes without saying. But like the way I always describe the difference between online and live poker to people is that like they're the same game, but live has an extra element of information, and that extra element is live tells. I actually just finished recording a live tells product, or we had a videographer come to the house, and I have like a custom poker table over here and had the whole setup, which will be released sometime in the fall. But I've always been super into live tells, and I think that that was like kind of my first, you know, diving off the deep end and really trying to get a read on people.
Right. I mean, this is back in 2008. Obviously, the poker training world wasn't nearly what it is today. Were you consulting like, you know, Mike Caro's famous Book of Tells before, you know, approaching the live felt for the first time, or just kind
of
like?
Yeah, that was one of the first books that I read. I used Caro's Book of Tells. Joe Navarro had some video content as well back in the day. And it's always been something that I've been super into. And, you know, some players would just look at a situation and be like, oh, that's terrible from a theory perspective. Right. And I would think about it from a live tell perspective. And so even now, sometimes I get a little like trapped in the live tell world and make mistakes that poker theoretically you shouldn't make. But it is also, if you use them correctly, you just have so much room for bigger edges.
And you'd say this even at the current level that you're playing, you know, it's not just, you know, the 3 and 4 figure buy-ins anymore.
Oh, absolutely. I've always, like, live tells are incredibly underutilized. Mm-hmm. And there's really not a ton of great material out there. It's one of the reasons I decided to make a product on it.
Cool.
And we might release it before the World Series, but I'm pretty sure we're going to release it in the fall. We just want to make sure that it's complete. And
sure. And obviously, we don't want to necessarily, quote unquote, promote the competition. But for a beginner, would you say that those early books by Caro, by Navarro, kind of hold up for people just, you know, still looking to get into the game and learn a little bit about live tells?
Yes and no. Like, I think that those are good because they teach you like what to look at. But they also assign strength and weakness to each thing when nowadays they don't really hold true. People are so much more conscious of their physicalities that, you know, a lot of the things are on purpose. And so there's a special art to being able to decode live tells. And I think that very, very small percentage of people are actually good at it.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
I kind of got lucky because, you know, I figured out, you know, a lot of tells years and years ago, and I've been playing so much live poker that I kind of see how they've changed and developed throughout the last, you know, 5 or 10 years.
Right. It's always a little bit nerve-wracking for me. You know, I know it's just Zoom. We're not actually playing poker, but when you say you got, you know, the tells down, man, what's your read on me? I'm not sure, but hopefully pretty good. You came well prepared, I hope you're thinking. So, you know, between, you know, 2008, you started and, you know, you're winning ways. Your breakthrough moment, I guess you could say, came in 2010. You won your first bracelet at the WSOP. It was a 5K ELO event, and those were some pretty dang great players at the last couple tables there. What was it like to take down that event in particular, given the competition level and the fact that it was PLO? I mean, how much PLO had you played up until that point?
Oh, I played quite a bit. Pretty early in my career, I actually, like to build a bankroll, I would play like the daily tournaments and I would grind PLO cash until I was out of the tournaments. Or if I got to the final table, sometimes I would stop my cash sessions. But overall, like I've been grinding PLO for years and years and years. And my two best games have always been no middle and poker and PLO cash.
Sure. Okay. And winning your first bracelet in PLO as opposed to no limit hold'em, any particular significance to you?
I think that it probably felt better. Like you said, like the players that were in it with like Mercier and Hellmuth and just Eric Wu and just some absolute legends of the game at the time, definitely made it feel pretty darn good.
Right. At that point, you win your first bracelet. I imagine you kind of feel on top of the world. You know, obviously it's been a while since then, since 2010, but like, where did you sort of think that you're headed from there? And did you think you'd be at the stage you're at right now? Did it become a goal? You know, is it just, oh, okay, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, pass Hellmuth and Brunson, you know, all those guys for most bracelets. Like, what's your mindset after winning number one?
I've always been very just monetarily oriented. Like, I mean, that first bracelet win definitely stands out amongst all the wins. So like the first bracelet, the first WPT, the first, you know, like those things really do mean more than the ones after that. But I've never really set goals for certain things to win, except for like last year, maybe 2 years ago, I wanted to win WPT just because I've played so many and I hadn't, you know, it just was like, I want to get this monkey off my back.
Right.
But in general, I think that it's a really difficult way to like set goals. Like I think expectations in poker lead to disappointment. And, you know, if you're someone who can deal with that, then like expecting to win a tournament, you know, can actually help you play better, but it makes the bust out more painful. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, I know that's what Foxen does. Like, he goes into every tournament expecting to win and deals with the disappointment afterwards. Like, I go into every tournament thinking of it as like a good opportunity, and I'm going to play my best and see what happens.
Nice. Okay, cool. No secret that poker has gotten a lot tougher, you know, and it continues to get tougher as people get in the lab, as people play more, get more experience under their belts. Obviously, you know, you keep up by, you know, playing, studying, coaching, all the things that you need to do to, you know, stay up to date with the theory, with the practice. What about how, you know, I say game selection is always very important. What factors do you sort of evaluate when deciding which tournaments to play?
The structure is really relevant. The buy-in. Like for me, it's like, I wouldn't necessarily say that the buy-in's relevant anymore. You know, if I want to play a 250K, I'll just sell a bunch of action and go play it. So for the average person versus me, like the average person, it should be the structure of the field, expected field size and what you're trying to accomplish. For someone who's only playing for an hourly, like, and only cares, like if that's their only, you know, the only thing that matters to them is making as much money per hour, then they should probably be looking at the structure and like the edge, and it's like, it's kind of different. But if you don't care about the hourly and you want to increase your chances of winning something, then you, and you have a good skill edge, then you want a better structure.
Sure. Sure. I mean, most even like world-class players, you'd say if you're cashing 20% of the time, that's pretty darn good. There's a lot of disappointment to deal with. When you're playing cash games, most of the time one tends to win if they're a winning player. Do you have a preference for tournaments or cash games based on those facts, those sort of statistics?
What you said is absolutely true. Like, I always make the joke that if you like play tournaments for a living, you're just like a masochist. Like, it is so painful. Like, I remember winning the 10K short deck WSOP event, and I busted a ton of stuff after that, like probably like for 2 weeks straight. I probably busted 30, 40 bullets in different events. And I was like, man, I don't know how people do this for a living. Mm. And I was only being semi-sarcastic. And it's, I can't imagine some players who only play tournaments that don't win, like how strong they must be mentally. Like, it just must be so incredibly like torturous.
Right. Okay. Well, in that sense, I got to ask the natural follow-up then. So you've said what factors you evaluate as far as picking which tournaments to play. How about a cash game?
Cash games is really important to game select, and also like kind of important to have fun. Like, one of the biggest things I like about tournaments is like the stack sizes change, the dynamics shift, the bubble, the post-bubble, the pre-final table, the final table, shorthanded. Like, those shifts make it really interesting. One of the things that kind of bore me with cash is like, there's not really that big of dynamic shifts. So there's not as much to think about. It's like much, much simpler in my opinion. So I would say that like in cash games, like it's really important to enjoy yourself, because otherwise it's just going to be boring as all hell.
What makes an enjoyable table for Chance Cornuth?
A lot of fish. No. I like chatty. I like people that are fun and easygoing. Like, when I'm not in a hand, like, I am pretty jovial.
Right.
But when I'm in a hand, obviously I'm incredibly serious.
Sure.
So I think that that's a big factor when I'm playing cash, is like, there's a lot of, you know, cash games that are just like grinders that are on their phones or have headphones or playing some stupid app poker. And honestly, it's just like a miserable environment and people wonder why the games are drying up. It's like, we as a, like, if you think about what a recreational player does when they play poker, okay, they know they're losing money on average. Say they're losing 10 or 100K a year, like they know they are. But it's like, it's the same concept as going to a movie. You're paying $15 an hour to go see a movie at the movie theater, or, you know, anything. You go to a baseball game, you pay $200 for your ticket. It's not used baseball because it's boring to watch, but but in general, like, it's the entertainment value of a recreational activity for someone. And so when a lot of the generation that's like right behind mine are playing live poker, like, your job is to host and to make sure that they have a good time. And I think that that art is lost on a lot of the players that are younger than me, and even some of the ones in my generation. But it's just so important that they have a good time. Like, you need them to come back. And if they're not having fun because you're just sitting on your phone the whole time, like, they're not going to come back, and your hourly is going to go down in the future.
Sure. When do you think you learned that, or that that first became apparent to you as a winning player?
I mean, because I'm so good at, like, one of my skills that helps me be so good at live tells is my pattern recognition. And so, like, I did notice it pretty early on. I think that it's fortunate for me that my, like, at the poker table, for the most part, I'm incredibly extroverted. And so it kind of comes naturally to me to, you know, entertain and converse with the people at the table. But a lot of people, they got into, like, get into poker introverts, and it just doesn't really fit for them as an individual. So I do understand why, like, not everyone does it, but you can still make a little effort, I would say.
Sure, sure. Always say that, you know, the Cards Chat podcast is the friendliest poker podcast in town. Based on what you said, as far as, you know, the importance of having fun at the tables, who would you say is the friendliest player you've competed against in the past?
For some reason, Sam Grafton is coming up for me, even though I haven't really played with him very often.
Okay, that's fair. We got to get him on the podcast, hopefully at some point soon. We'll contact PokerStars. He's an ambassador for them. nice shout out there. So 2021 and 2022 were, by all appearances, your two most successful years at the live tournament felt. You won at the MSPT, the Wynn Summer Classic, a bracelet at the WSOP, three wins on the Poker Go Tour during those couple years, of course, that WPT title, and plenty of other excellent results. I mean, the ones that I named are wins. And then there's also results. I know we're not, I mean, you mentioned already in the earlier in the show, we're not supposed to be results-oriented poker. I can't help but wonder, though, you know, looking at that two-year period of time, to what extent do you attribute your relative increased success during that two-year period to variance, as opposed to something that you're doing to try and gain an edge, whether it's focusing on personal health or something that you're doing? You don't have to say exactly what it is, but, you know, what are the percentages there of, you know, what's responsible for the success?
I mean, you always have to, like, you can't win without getting lucky in some ways, right? Like, there's 100 different ways to run good. The opponents could just miss the flop over and over and you get to bluff them. They could have the second best hand. You know, they have a hand to call when you're value betting. You could literally lose every single pot and just win every time you're on. You know, so there's infinite ways to run good or bad. And I definitely strung together a lot of the good ways. But like in that MSPT, when I free bet jammed the bubble with 7-3 off for 11 big blinds, because I was just certain the guy was folding. You know, and so like there's definitely, I was doing some incredible stuff with live tells in that string. I also ran really well. And one of the things that was the biggest change in my life was actually getting sober. I quit drinking. And it really allowed me to play better and have better mental clarity. And the number of mistakes I would make at the table went down significantly.
All right. Well, congratulations. How long has it been?
I started that journey a little over 2 years ago now. And had a little trouble with it sticking. I was still doing other stuff, smoking weed and partying sometimes. And then about 8 months ago, I got completely sober, and not doing anything else has made it pretty easy not to drink. So
good for you. And there's also been some additional focus on improved lifestyle, fitness, health. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, if you're referring to the thread that I wrote about the fitness, that was actually from 2019. I didn't keep in that good of shape. In fact, I'm working on getting in WSOP shape now.
Okay.
But yeah, I do think in general, like, I mean, even if I had that for the majority of 2019 and 2020, like, that will definitely carry over. Being physically fit at the poker table allows you, especially in tournaments, to be able to play long sessions and continue to play your A game throughout the day.
Sure. Okay. Speaking of people who play their A game, especially at like the high roller, super high roller kind of events, you tend to see the same faces repeat themselves, yours among them. It may not be one of those folks, but I'm just kind of wondering, is there someone you particularly enjoy? Not the friendliest necessarily, but like your favorite player to play against?
Wait, you mean as like someone that I crush or someone that's just enjoyable?
You don't have to state the reason. Maybe it's someone you just happen to hold over for no apparent reason, but.
Oh, that's got to be Foxen then. I mean, I've held over him in like the last 10 things we've played. I get kings against his queens. I get to value bet. Like, I mean, it's just been hilarious. And it's kind of an ongoing joke between the two of us. How like incredible I've ran against him. Like even winning Choctaw, I won a big flip, like tens to ace queens with three tables left. I stacked his wife at the final table.
Yep.
You know, like I've held over Alex pretty significantly over the last couple of years, and it's been pretty fun, especially someone that I have like that almost brotherly relationship with, mm-hmm. especially at the table. You know, we're always trying to one-up each other and show each other bluffs. And when you get to hold over someone that you're like pretty close with, I mean, that's, doesn't get better than that.
That's fun. It's like bragging rights, you know, two teams from the same city. That's good stuff. Well, I do have a question about him, but that one actually comes next. Just to sort of preface it, you know, obviously it's on the shirt. You talked about it a little bit, your poker training company, Chip Leader Coaching. How hard was it to build what you've built? And what motivated you to start a poker training company in the first place?
I had a really good year in 2017 or 2018, like crushing, maybe 2016, just crushing like a bunch of high rollers. And a friend of mine convinced me to start the company as a coaching for profit. And we actually used to have like groups of students that we'd coach in one-on-ones and group lessons. And we would take a percentage of their cashes. And COVID kind of killed that. Live poker, you know, obviously was what we were focused on, even though, a lot, like I said, same game, just with the extra elements of information for live. But the problem was like people would lie about how much they would play, which hurts our EV. And then some people wouldn't pay their bills, which makes it even worse. And so we decided to switch to like product-based and subscription-based, also because time isn't scalable and I have a family now and I really wanted to be able to, you know, scale my time and be able to spend time with my family. And so now it's like when I was in Vegas, I would say that it was probably like 90-10. I would like play poker and then work a little bit on the company. But now that I moved to Nashville, it's definitely reversed. I would say like 80% of my time is focused to building a bigger and better training site. We have goals to be the number one training site in the next 10 years. And yeah, I truly think we can do it with me and Foxen at the helm making products and continuing to crush tournaments in a facet that isn't seen. You know, like Foxen is current ranked number one in the world. He plays everything and wins everything. And I don't think he has any shot he'll slow down. Right. And even though I'm playing a little bit less, like, you know, I'm still going to travel probably 8 to 10 days a month and play like all the good WPTs and stuff like that. I'm going to Florida the end of the month and then 7 weeks in Vegas for the, you know, the obvious summer stretch.
Sure.
So, you know, even though I am taking a little bit of time down to grind, like the company has become my primary focus. And in order to build a company, like it's difficult. It's a lot of work and it's a different kind of rewarding, but I've been thoroughly enjoying it.
That's very interesting because, you know, got to go back sort of to the things. Lots to unpack there. I want to remember all my questions, but one of them is, you know, you left high school to engage in this challenge of something that you were good at and playing, and all of a sudden this new thing comes about. Obviously, it's like, well, sure, it's profitable and not anyone wants to make money, but what have you sort of discovered about yourself in building this business of like possibly something that matters to you, any sort of feeling of pride of teaching students, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of students that I've spent time with one-on-one, or even just ones that have bought our products, like the person who won the WPT in Sacramento, or what's that WPT called?
Rolling Thunder?
Yeah, the one that just finished was someone who bought the Closer, our flagship product.
Oh, wonderful.
And just seeing that, like, I have an incredible sense of pride in, like, I mean, seeing people that you've, like, coached do incredibly well in poker, it's just a testament to the quality of our products. And that, like, that's one of the things is, like, there's a lot of content out there. And honestly, a lot of it's not very good. It's just, like, people talking about solvers, which, like, it's relevant. It's good to know a baseline, but it's not really how you, like, crush poker.
Right.
And so we take a lot of pride in our work, from the production value to the content. Mm-hmm. You know, for the live tells recording, we did like a custom table, and I hired a videographer to come to the house and have like a full set. And, you know, all of our products will continue to have the highest production value and the best content that there is on the market. And
awesome.
Like you said, that sense of pride is important to us.
That's awesome. Shout out Scott Eskenazi.
Eskenazi. I couldn't think of his last name.
I was like looking, I was like, what was his name? We just published an interview with him on my
site. Yeah, but it's like in our company chat, it's like, I saw his name and I'm like, didn't he just buy the Closer? And like,
right.
And I'm like, yeah, let's go.
There you go.
Like, we love seeing stuff like that.
There you go. Obviously, you were used to be living the Vegas life, now Nashville. Why Nashville?
We have some really close friends here, including a set of grandparents, well, non-blood grandparents. And, you know, like anyone who has a kid, when someone watches your kid, it's like they're clearly doing you a favor. But when our daughter goes with this grandma, Oma, it feels like we're doing Oma a favor. And that just is such a nice feeling to have someone that like loves and cares so much for our daughter. And like, that's all she's like, can I have her for 3 days this weekend? And we're like, yes, you know? And so like, that was the biggest factor for me to be okay with moving here. Emily has two of her bridesmaids that live here as well. So like a couple of people she's really close with, and, I'm good at making friends and have, you know, had some pretty good success in the first few months that we've been here. So we're really liking it here and we're starting to get settled and the weather is finally
settling down.
Manageable, yeah.
Nice. I guess, Oma, that they're Dutch.
I think that's the German word for grandma. Okay, yeah. They're something actually like Bosnian, but that's what she wanted to be called. So
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Your daughter, how old is she?
She is 28 months old.
Oh, we're still doing months. Okay. I think after 2 years.
Yeah.
I got
well, 2 years isn't like 2 years and 4 months is a big difference between 2 years. You know?
That is
especially
true.
At that age. So.
That is true. I know all about the dad life. How did that affect you personally? In what ways? As far as, you know, just different than being a dad, what do you like about your life more now than 28 months ago?
It's considerably more balanced. Like 28 months ago, I was still in that 90% playing poker mode. And now it's like one of the biggest reasons that I want to focus on the company is because I can do it from home. And it's, I wake up and help her get ready for school and see them out the door. And then I come to the office. And, like that's probably the biggest change is like me wanting to be around more because I still love playing live poker. I like thoroughly enjoy it. I like the people aspect of it. I like building castles. I like bluffing. I like value bet. Like every aspect of it is like so much fun for me. But the joy that you get from like having a child and spending time with them and watching them grow is pretty incredible. So it's been the biggest change for sure.
Nice to hear it. All right, we will switch back to the original question then, talking about chip leader coaching. You mentioned Alex Foxen, also on the site, Joe McKean. He's involved. Why them? Why did you choose them to be sort of part of the roster and help you get to your goal of, you know, succeeding as the hopefully number one poker training site in the next decade?
Well, Foxham was simple. He was actually one of my first students when we started the company. I was playing poker with him at the table, and I was looking for like my first five guys from the core group from the Coaching for Profit. And I could just tell that he like had what it took. And I was like, hey, can I talk to you on break? And I was like, dude, you have it. You just need like a few tweaks. And we became like pretty good friends, and he just started crushing the world. And, you know, now when I have poker questions, I ask him, and
right.
You know, so it's like definitely the student has become the master type of situation. But it's fun, you know, it's like I enjoy making products with him. And Joe McKeon is actually the person that I travel with when I go to Florida and a lot of other stops. And he asked to coach during that time period, back when we were still doing it, and still does a little bit of stuff with us. And yeah, Joe and I are friends, and he has a fun, dry sense of humor. And yeah, I like him too.
Cool. Who would you say is the target audience that you're trying to reach with your training product?
Anyone who wants to just do better and improve in at poker tournaments specifically. And I mean, I guess the LiveTales product is going to be, you know, usable in cash games too. And maybe we will eventually have more cash game products. But yeah, like if you're wanting to get better at tournaments, like that's currently what we specialize in. And I highly recommend checking it out.
Cool. You mentioned that Joe is your travel buddy, and you've obviously done a lot of world travel. Do you have a place that's your favorite to play poker, or perhaps something that's, you know, on the bucket list of a place you'd like to travel for the first time, whether for poker or not?
For poker, kind of not really, but there's definitely some bucket list travels for me. In Japan is like pretty close to the top of the list. I've always wanted to go there, and I've been fortunate enough to travel all over the world, whether it's playing poker or not. And that's just kind of the elusive spot that I haven't gone yet that's at the top of mine and my wife's bucket list. So,
cool. Is there a spot you want to go back to again and perhaps bring your wife and child that you just enjoyed so much you want them to see it too?
Yeah, I mean, Emily's been to most of them with me, but like my top three cities in the world are probably maybe four cities in the world. I want to see Barcelona when it's not poker season, when it's like the on season, not the off season, down season. Mm-hmm. In no specific order. Cape Town, South Africa, Melbourne, Australia, and Amsterdam are all just incredible cities that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Nice. Very cool. Good selections. I've been to... Which ones? I've just been to Amsterdam, so I got a little bit more traveling to do myself. I mentioned before also just like the incredible wins that you've had, not just results, but wins. You've won an incredible 22 ranking tournaments. Is there one that's particularly the most satisfying to you?
I mean, it's got to be that first bracelet.
Okay.
Yeah. Because like that's kind of like a sense of like accomplishment and solidified, or no, maybe not solidified, but it made me feel good about my decision to drop out of school. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, like this, I'm on the right path. And then everything else is like getting trophies is great. But having financial security for your family is considerably more important, and the freedom to, you know, send her to private school or to do whatever we want for vacations. And like those type of things are way more important to me than trophies. So whichever tournaments I won the most money in, I would probably say.
For sure. Well, you know, a lot, let me say, like, you know, there's a very big difference. You always remember the guy who, you know, or the girl who wins, not necessarily second place, third place, and closing out tournaments. There's a lot going on, especially at the high profile tournaments. You got the TVs and the lights and money being dumped on the table and trophy presentations and a whole lot of things that would distract, you know, any normal person. Is there, especially like, you know, the huge, you know, mega fields and stuff, is there a particular sort of place you go to or a flow that you experience that allows you to have excelled so many times once it gets down to heads up?
It's not just heads up. Like that's not the reason that I went get first compared to second. I believe it is like that flow state, that optimizing my mind, that level of focus that I do when I go deep in tournaments, the meditation, the everything. And it's like all of those things that you are doing compound to have more chips when you're heads up, or to already have picked up on your opponent's imbalances, be it poker strategy or tells. Mm-hmm. And when you have the ability to continue to pick up information and, like, you know, there's all ins, there's showdowns, and now everyone's at the same table, no one's getting moved. And so, like, those, if people aren't balanced and you figure out where they're unbalanced, you really have the ability to exploit them and target them in incredibly positive ways. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I've done pretty well.
Okay. Well, we talked about not necessarily being results oriented. Let's just take, you know, for example, this World Series of Poker coming up, you know, 7 weeks of just, you know, massive grinding that you've got to do, you know, without having to be results oriented. What sort of metrics do you tick off in your head that you consider, you know, even if, you know, you've lost and just, you know, busted so many tournaments, because, you know, that just happens. What metrics do you take for yourself? Okay, I'm satisfied with my performance that I had this summer.
Maybe number of mistakes per day. I'm not certain, to be honest. Like, there's a lot of days where, like, not a lot of days, but sometimes you play exceptionally well and you just lose all ins. And there's nothing you can do, or maybe the river's bad and you have to pull, you know, it's like, that's something you can't control. And so I guess when I'm proud of my play, it's when I do well at executing the things that are under my control.
Nice. Okay. And that's, you know, to what degree do you evaluate yourself in game at the end of each day? I mean, like, it's just, there's just, again, so much going on, and you immediately got to hop into the next tournament. So what's sort of like the, I don't know, the process, like a professional athlete also, you know, do you review the game tape? Like, how do you sort of go through that?
I think self-reflection is an incredible skill that you can better yourself on a daily basis of, like, looking at, or a weekly basis, some of the planners recommend, where you actually look back and say, did I execute on what my goals were this week, or where could I have been better? Where was I worse? And I've actually read a lot of content recently that some incredibly successful people talk about evaluating their performance on a weekly basis. And to be quite honest, I'm reading that content because I'm not great at it. I need to improve in that area. I think a more regular self-reflection will allow me to optimize my performance at the World Series.
Sure. Okay. And just, you know, with all the stresses of playing poker, you know, being a devoted family man, building a business, what's your favorite activity to engage in to decompress?
I think just spending time with my family. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start getting into golf soon, but I haven't really yet. The gym or working out helps. There's a handful of different things you can do to, like, take your mind off of poker. And it's kind of tricky during such, like, a busy poker time where you focus so much on cards. And then, like, even when you're not playing, there's hands running through your brain. Mm-hmm. And having the ability to, like, reset is really important.
Yeah. Okay. Just a couple last questions from me before we get into the community questions segment of the show. You mentioned in the past that the 25K PSPC kind of compares to the WSOP main event. Now we've got another massive event on the calendar, WPT World Championship. So, you know, obviously, you know, someone ranking the three of them, that's subjective. But I'm just kind of wondering, as far as your approach to them, is there anything that you particularly look forward to when anticipating each of those three events?
I think just kind of the potential of them. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of tournaments that I can play these days that are life-changing money anymore. And those three all are still. So, like, that, you know, it's kind of like when you buy a lottery ticket, like, some of the value comes from, like, think, to quote Josh Arieh, is like thinking about what you would do with the money, like how it would change your life. And obviously, like, these poker tournaments aren't the same scale as the lottery, but winning $5 million would still change my life. And thinking about, you know, like right now we're looking at private schools, and one of them is an incredible amount of money per year. Mm-hmm. If I won one of those, that wouldn't even be a discussion, you know? So it's like having the, again, like the financial freedom to be able to do anything you want. And nice. Even though we are like comfortable, we still have limitations. And
sure, of course.
You know, to every limitation you get to remove is an extra sense of freedom.
Cool. What would be like the splurge on yourself if you won $5 million, just like, you know, not non-security oriented as far as just, you know, being able to do what you want, but just something for fun?
I don't know. To be honest, like I never really celebrate by buying myself things. Hmm. Yeah, I never really have at all.
Interesting. Well, something to perhaps ponder for when it does for when it does happen eventually. Last question of mine. Scrolled endlessly through your Twitter feed, and there's one real like beauty among the other pearls of wisdom you've spouted over the years: the Drink Bounty Tournament. Can you kind of explain what that is? Just, you know, again, I know I'm bringing that up after you had said about sobriety and stuff like that, but I'm just kind of wondering, it begs for some sort of explanation.
I mean, it was just a fun idea for a drinking game at the table that included the action of others that might influence people to try to stack someone if they wanted them to have to slam their drink or steal their drink. It was, you know, I wouldn't think too much into it.
Okay, fair enough. It just had to. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Got to ask the one. All right, folks, this is now the segment of the show. We turn to you guys, our Cards Chat community, to see what questions you wanted to ask our guests. We have a dedicated thread on the Cards Chat forums for this. So as we announce who our future guests will be, please be sure to send in your questions. We'll try to get through as many as possible. A lot of new names here that I haven't seen before. One of them is Maddie Bumpo. Thank you so much for submitting this one for Chance. Wants to know, Chance, what was your most memorable poker hand?
That's a good question. I think maybe this like queen three suited versus ace king years ago at the WSOP final table or WSOP main event, just because people have like mentioned it to me multiple times, not because it was like memorable for me specifically. Uh-huh. But there's been many times where someone's like the person actually like came up to me, was like a friend of a friend, and reminded me that I three bet shoved a big blind with queen three suited against their ace king and made a three or something and stacked them in the main event.
Right.
And it was kind of funny because like I only did it because the orbit prior, someone shoved like nine big blinds from the hijack and he took ages and like clearly was considering folding ace queen. And I was like, man, if this guy doesn't know that this is a snap call, he's going to be like folding everything when he opens. And even when I jammed queen three suited on him, it took him a decade to call with ace king and like an obvious snap spot for like 18 big blinds. So like, you know, that one kind of stands out. The one that definitely runs through my brain the most frequently as far as maybe regret or just crosses my mind is the ace king to aces bust out at in 16th place. Like that one probably is currently the most memorable.
Interesting. Okay. Well, hopefully the new one will be the one that wins you the big 5 million or something like that at some point. That'll be nice. It'll take the sting out of it. We had asked before, so we'll get to the next question asker, Zoro222. We asked you your favorite opponent, your friendliest opponent. This question asker wants to know who was your toughest opponent you've ever played against.
I think it's the same answer. It's going to be Alex Boxen again. Partially because he's just incredibly tough and one of the best players in the world. But also because we talk a lot of poker. So it's kind of like a leveling war of like, is he doing this because of the thing we were talking about? Or do I just go back to thinking about like poker ranges and theory? And so the extra dynamics that we have between us makes for him being the most difficult for sure. And also the fact that he just loves owning me. And so, like, I don't know if he's just three betting something at a high frequency because he wants to own me, or if he actually has a good hand. And like I said, like, that leveling war and those unique dynamics that we have definitely make him the toughest.
That's pretty cool. Now knowing this, I'm going to try to pay extra special attention next time you guys are seated at the same table. Just to
We go to like all out war.
Right. I
mean, one of us just always beats the other guy.
Nice. Toddy, another question asker here. To what degree does your physical training affect having good results in poker? I guess you can extrapolate just an overall general fitness and conditioning, that sort of thing.
I think it's incredibly important. Like, tournament days alone, just the day, one day, are long. And the longer you go in the day, the more valuable the pots are, the larger percentage of your stack, the more chips, the more everything. Like, just being able to play your best as the days go on, or as the day goes on, is incredibly important. And then when you couple that with the fact that tournaments are multiple days, and that a tournament series is even more days, and WSOP is weeks. It matters a lot. And like, you probably saw, or maybe saw Daniel Negreanu's thread about starting to train for this World Series and like all of the fitness stuff that he's doing. And even the players that are in bad shape some of the players even that are in bad shape do some preparation, and it matters a lot. And there's been times where I wasn't prepared, and physically you're just drained after a while, mentally, physically, et cetera. And like, I think of our ability to focus as a muscle that strengthens the more we use it. So I'll be playing some online sessions. I'll be meditating more. I'll be working out, and I'm starting a little bit now.
Nice. As you should. Very nice. Very nice. Kun Aguero Cruz, another name I haven't seen before. Thanks for submitting this one. Cute. I like this one. Chance, you've won a prop bet and you've lost a lot of weight. What do you think? Do you think Sean Deeb is going to make it?
I hope so. I mean, Sean's a good friend of mine. One of his sons is named Chance. And so, yeah, him and I have been pretty close for a long time. And I'm very, very happy for him, win or lose. This will be the best decision he's ever made in his life.
Nice. Well, of course, we're talking about the big bet with Bill Perkins. Good luck, Sean Deeb. You don't have to answer this one if you feel it's given something away, but Crystals wants to know, Chance, what is the one thing that you need to fix about your game that keeps coming up when you bust tournaments?
My ability to play well with time banks. Sometimes I just, especially in that first like 30 minutes of the day, when that dealer says 10 seconds, I just like spaz out. I mean, it's insane, the amount of mistakes. In fact, my bust out from the 25K PSPC this year was like a clear call. The guy raised small blind. I looked at Jack nine suited or something. It doesn't matter. But a hand that's like a clear call. And that I know is a call for this stack up. And for some reason, 10 seconds, and like I just spaz it in. And I'm not sure why. I have began practicing like with turning my volume up online. So when it beeps and like I don't get maybe shook, or maybe it's the act of putting in a time chip, but it is something that I've began to address and have become increased. I have a very increased awareness since January of this particular league.
Interesting. Okay, so we'll give you a chance to practice. We'll give you 10 seconds to answer this question by Great Young. Thanks for submitting it. Chance, can you suggest a particular type of recreation that's good, especially for poker players, or is it just really individual?
The two that I liked the most that I don't do anymore, because they are problem-solving-esque, are Brazilian jiu-jitsu, because it's like, okay, if they do this, then you do this. And it like everything has a response. Just like in poker, if someone does something too much, there's a response that's optimal. And then I really truly enjoyed bouldering, which is like this bouldering, which is like rock climbing indoors. I did indoors. Oh, listen. And bouldering is when it's like a small problem of like 4 to 20 moves. It's not like just a route up the wall. It's like a tricky problem where you figure out the first couple of moves and you have to figure out the third, and then you figure out like, and you get stuck and you have to figure out how to move your body. And so it's like the problem solving skills that are good for poker, I believe, transition well for those.
That is a phenomenal answer. That's a great answer. I love it. Great. Not that I'm one to judge, but I just like, wow, that's a perfect answer to that question.
I miss those two activities.
Right. Good stuff. Burma Joga, another new name. Thanks for submitting this one. This will say a lot about you. Chance, what goes through your mind when you're only getting bad hands dealt to you?
It's easy to get a little frustrated when I only get bad hands. Like, I think that's just kind of natural for everyone. But I think maybe a better thing to be aware of would be that your image is getting better. So you might be able to get away with something that you wouldn't normally. Like, if you're getting queen jack suited every hand and you're raising or calling and you're in every single hand, well, you might want to be less inclined to take a through that bluff because your perceived image is much wider. But if you're getting just bad hands, then you can take advantage of that by having additional fold equity in a good spot.
Next level, that's for sure. That's not something that someone like myself, a serious recreational player, would even think of. I'd be like, fuck this, you know, got to get more hands.
Yeah.
I like your answer a lot better. I think the audience is too. Mariusika88 wants to know, Chance, do you intend to play any tournaments in Europe this year?
I don't have any Europe trips on the books at the moment. I have been limiting my foreign travel since we had a kid. You know, it's hard enough for me to go to Florida and be away for like 8 whole days. Like, even that, it's like, okay, I'm debating, like, do I fly out in the morning so I get an extra night with the family? Or like in this particular case, like this next upcoming trip, it's like, all right, I'll take the latest flight out of town so I'm well rested the next morning. And yeah, Europe just seems unlikely because of that.
Right. Well, you know, got a dad first and poker will still be there, you know, after they move out of the house. I will tell you that. Chica Bonita, picking just one of three excellent questions here. It's always nice to talk about wins, but please tell us about the biggest loss that has happened to you in your poker career. Doesn't have to necessarily be monetary.
When I lived in Florida back in the day, I probably had like somewhere between $800K and $1 million. And I played this 48-hour session where I was playing mixed games and big bet mixed. And honestly, I had no business being there. And just kept playing. And I ended up getting pretty much even. And I had like 400 or 500K in front of me. And I was playing someone heads up, deuce to seven, triple draw, pot limit or no limit or something. And I got number two and we get it all in and he has number one. And just lost it all after this like huge session. And definitely not my brightest moment. But like one of the benefits, you know, you got to learn from your mistakes. And like, I realized that I don't have to play the highest stakes and the toughest games to be incredibly successful at what I do. And like one of the things that's, you know, one of my biggest growths throughout the years has really just realizing that like, I don't even have to play 100Ks in Europe to be one of the best players in the world. Like I can just be the best player in these 5K no limit main events, WPTs, et cetera, where I have an incredible ROI. I can make a ton of money and, don't have to worry about going on a downswing that might affect me mentally. And, you know, so I have just kind of taken my ego out of it, of wanting to play the biggest games in the world and just allowed myself to try to be content with what's in front of me.
Yeah. Next level answer. Love it. Just I'm looking at the clock. Do we have time for three more questions? Are you okay?
Yeah, I can do three more.
Okay, we'll choose them carefully. Fast One wants to know, if you weren't playing poker professionally, what would you think you'd be doing instead?
That's a good question, because in college I was architectural engineering, which like I can't fathom having a career in. And I think my brain works well for something in business and finance. Like, I've always had a good name for, or good brain for optimization. And like, you can walk into a restaurant or some kind of business and just, I immediately think of like how it could be improved. So maybe something in consulting. I'm not sure.
Nice. Okay. Good answer. I'll give you one last chance to plug the training site. Lavart wants to know, how long do you think it would take a complete amateur with some coaching and the direction of a solid coach to become a winning player?
It's kind of an open-ended question, because a winning player at what stakes?
Okay.
Naturally, I think I could teach someone to be some of the lowest stakes in not very long at all. Like, it wouldn't take a considerable amount of training. But I think like developing a good fundamental strategy, and then also learning how to think about the spot, and like kind of like poker is just a giant game of rock, paper, scissors. And if you can see where someone's throwing rock too much, then you need to learn how to throw paper. So that would be the analogy or metaphor that I would use for that. And, you know, I don't think it would take more than a couple of months if someone like worked really hard and devoted their life to it.
Sure. Okay. And that's chipleadercoaching.com. Just throw that in there. And last one, Acid Burn FX, one of our all-time favorite question askers, asked some great ones here, but we've got to ask one. So I'll ask a special one. Chance, if you could start a charity, what would it be and why?
Start a charity? I'm not sure. But like, one of the things that I often would do around Christmas was donate money to a charity called Smile Train. That I think they fix cleft palates in Africa or something. But I just, smiling and joy is like so important, and being able to give someone the freedom to smile without being self-conscious of what it looks like, I think is like an incredible gift to give.
Very special. Man, I wish we had another hour so I could ask deeper questions. I have enjoyed the heck out of this. Thanks everyone who sent in questions for Chance Cornith. A friendly reminder to all you out there in the Cards Chat community, we would love to see you submit your questions for our future podcast guests in the dedicated thread on the forums. Guys, please be sure to give us a good review on iTunes and spread the word via your social media channels if you like the show. Chance, before we let you go, anything else you'd like to tell the Cards Chat audience?
No, thanks. Thanks for having me, Robbie.
Cool. Thanks. Guys, thanks for tuning in once again to another episode of Cards Chat. Thanks again, Chance Cornith. I'm Robbie Straczynski. You can follow me on Twitter at CardPlayerLife. I wish you all a wonderful day.
Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community.